If your brand belongs in the heart of the yachting world, this is where it happens. Yachting International Radio reaches over 1 million yachting professionals and enthusiasts every month, with 77 million impressions, 220,000 social followers, and 74,000 podcast subscribers. Our hosts are insiders, crew, captains, CEOs, trusted voices shaping the industry. This is targeted, high-impact advertising in a luxury niche. Visit yachtinginternationalradio.com/advertise. Your audience is already listening.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Rich as Fuck podcast, the show where we talk about money, life, investing, and all things in between in that yachty world. Today I have Josh Swart here with me, a ex-yachty, I believe, and someone that's very interested in personal finance, investing, and money in general. So really excited to talk to a bit more of a subject expert today. Everybody, as you know, the show is purely educational and informative and should not be misconstrued as financial advice. With all that being said, hello, Josh. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, and yourself, Sean?
Good. You're sitting in sunny South Africa?
This is right in the heart of Joburg, currently in Sandton. I mean, it's blue skies outside, but yeah, it's hot now. Super hot this side.
I see the men's traded teak decks for very lit up office cubicles.
Yeah, and a very minimalistic view of just another building. But, you know, you can't complain, not at all.
So for those that don't know you, why don't you give us a bit of background? Who are you? How was your yachting career? And how did you end up exiting?
Sure. Okay, so I'm actually 22 years old, right? Born and raised in South Africa. I don't have any sort of citizenship outside of South Africa. And I mean, I got into yachting, say, 3-4 years ago, right? So my season was relatively quick compared to, you know, a whole bunch of other yachties out there. And the last season that I had was in Italy, and it was incredible. But I felt that it wasn't necessarily for me. You know, I think that my brain just works within the financial realm. It clicks with me. But also my father growing up was, you know, involved in a lot of finance, well, in the finance industry. He was a labor broker. And so just from a young age, just constantly hearing about it at home, I think just, you know, put me on the path of becoming or doing something in the finance, you know, realm of things. Yeah.
Interesting. And what was your early money mindset? If you say you grew up very exposed to it and then you moved into such a crazy industry with so much money, how did that impact your mindset?
Well, I mean, after matric, right, as a South African, right, you're looking at either doing things, you're going to go and either work a low paying job, right, or you're going to go and study. Right? These are generally one or the other, unless, you know, you've got ties that you can get into something that will be able to pay you a decent amount. But generally, you're looking at a basic salary. I mean, you could be looking at 8,000 Rand. And then I said, you know what, screw this. This is not for me. Surely there's got to be something else out there. And I mean, also on Instagram, you're seeing these young kids also, you know, bringing in pots of money that are living overseas. You know, you want a piece of that pie. And so the only out is to go and work overseas. And how do you do that? Either you go and work land-based in some sort of industry. Like, you could go be a bartender in Dubai. You can go work on the golf courses in the US, for example. But I wanted to travel, and yachting just ticked that for me. And then being in that space, you start to realize that as a yachty, you're making a decent amount of money in South African terms, right? In South African terms, you're making anywhere from 40,000-50,000 Rand per month starting. And that's going to take you almost 15 years to acquire that sort of salary in South Africa alone with a degree. So that just changed my mindset from the get-go. I said, there's no ways that this is real. I'm 22 years old. I'm 20 years old and I'm earning 40,000 Rand. You know, at that stage, I think I was earning just a bit more than my mother. You get what I mean? And I mean, people that are living overseas will even tell you that, okay, you're earning 2,500 euros, dollars, whatever it may be, per month. That's not even that much. You get what I mean? That's not even that much in their terms. So it just goes to show that it's the world is a lot bigger than what we think as South Africans. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good point you make. And I think that's why a lot of us, and I say us because it's happened to me as well, kind of get that golden handcuffs and we get stuck. And after a few years, as you start progressing, you know, you go from 2.5 to 5 and then from 5 to 7.5. And before you know it, you're pulling in 200,000 rand in our country's terms, which is silly neurosurgeon type money.
Exactly.
But unfortunately, a lot of people don't work with the end in mind and realize one day this is going to stop. They fall victim of lifestyle creep and they attend every beach party and they have to buy every new iPhone and you're just kind of stuck in the hedonic treadmill. But you were obviously very aware of it since day one. Now, what I'm curious about, if you knew what type of earning power you were having and the fact that you were making so much disposable income, was it not difficult for you to exit, especially at a young age?
It was. I'm not going to lie. It's going from 40,000, 50,000 rand as to what I was earning. I mean, I was earning below, you know, the average or the salary industry standard, right? I was earning below that, but still earning a decent amount in South African terms. And when I had left, yes, I came home, but it didn't click in my mind that this is going to run out. Okay. And so you come back home for that holiday or whatever it may be, or your off season, and you just go and spend a whole bunch of money. That's what I did. I went and blew almost everything, and I've got a whole bunch of Yachty friends that have got the exact same, you know, story.
Yeah.
And yes, it was difficult, and I'm not going to lie. As of this current moment, I mean, there might be times where I get, you know, somewhat close to that, or I'm getting to the point now where I'm getting close to where I was at that stage, but it definitely wasn't as easy, you know, to get into that. I just think that there's a bit of a risk aspect involved with it. You get what I mean? I mean, keep in mind, when I left there, I was 21, 20 years old, not even 21 yet. And so I realized I'm also still young, right? I can't afford to mess up at this age. I'm not necessarily 35 coming off of a boat with 40,000 rand in my bank account. You get what I mean? So I can still go and do something that I wanted to, regardless of whether or not I was going to be earning whatever I was earning at that stage.
Yeah, that's a very good point you make. And it's important to know yourself and be honest with yourself. And you obviously clicked early on, you know, this job is not necessarily serving me as much as it should. And you're right. If you're young, before you have dependents, before life gets like really serious, like this is the time to take the gambles, go explore what you want to do. And yeah, I mean, there's no reason to stay in an industry just because it pays well. You know, there's a lot more to yachting for me than just a healthy paycheck. Yeah, it is cool. I love the fact that we problem solve all day and every day is new and you get new type of guests with crazy requests. And sometimes it's really painful, but sometimes it's really entertaining. So it's important to be introspective, like it seems you are. And then I really want to kind of dive deep onto some basics that people ask. And for those that don't know, Josh started a pretty cool WhatsApp community called the Yacht Crew Wealth Circle, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
And I will be sure to attach the link to that chat in the show notes for the show, because I think a lot of our listeners are Sapphire Yachties and they can get a lot of value from your midweek money drops. So normally on this show, I only have like kind of yacht industry experts and I'm the one that has to do all the finance jargon and explanation. So today there's two of us. So I want to touch on some topics and then let's see if you and I can explain things in layman's terms. So tell us about compound interest and why it's such a miracle.
Oh, it's magic. Okay, so compound interest. Okay, well, in layman's terms, right? So just to explain it from the bottom down, what compound interest means is, I'm going to give an example. If you have got 100,000 rand, for example, okay, and let's say this was put into an investment, okay, and this investment gave you a return of 10%, Okay. Ultimately, by the end of the year, right, within a year's time, you would have gained, well, that would be 10,000 Rand. Mm-hmm. Right? So now the value of your portfolio would be now sitting at 110,000 Rand. Okay. At the new year. Now, if it stayed at that 10%, it means that you're gaining 10%, not on the 100,000 anymore. You're gaining 10% on 110,000. Okay. So the following year after that year, you'd be looking at, what's that, 121,000 Rand in total. And the magic of it is time. Okay. This is the main component, right? Is time is everything in terms of investing, right? In terms of compound interest, it's the magic in time that allows a value to grow to what it can be, just to put it into layman's terms. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good explanation. And I think the issue is, and why a lot of young people especially don't see the magic of compound interest, is because it requires patience. And we are living in a society where instant gratification has become the norm. There's a lot of asset classes out there that are high risk, but high reward. You know, everyone wants to 10x their money in crypto, but no one wants to wait 10 to 15 years where you're kind of guaranteed a big return because no one is patient. So thank you for that explanation. And then on an education point, what books or podcasts would you recommend to listeners to kind of get a better grasp of compound interest and then the type of investing you and I like, which is passive, low-cost index fund investing?
Oh, investing-wise, I actually got a list of books over there. I think definitely I've actually got one that I'm currently reading, or that I've just started reading, right? Oh, well, a couple. So definitely High Performance, right, by Jake Humphrey, right, is definitely a good book that I've just started. And then there's also one that's called The Stoic Path to Wealth. Okay, so just that one speaks on the Stoics, right? Yeah. I'm not necessarily a podcast listener, right? Yeah. I like to read. And, you know, I just think that it engages with my mind a little bit more. Yeah. But yeah, they go through the basics and also just the different styles and strategies that the different authors have taken throughout their life. Yeah, definitely those two, for sure.
There's the two books that probably had the most profound, like maybe three books that had the most profound impact on me personal finance-wise was firstly, The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel, crazy New York Times bestseller. And that doesn't necessarily dive into the technicality of it as much, but it explains what is money, what is the psychology behind it, and why do all of us behave so differently with it in our hands or when it's taken away from our hands. On a more technical front, there's two books. The one's called I Will Teach You to Be Rich by Ramit Sethi. It's a garbage title, but a very good book. And that's just all about personal finance basics, you know, how to kind of optimize credit cards, what is good debt, what is bad debt, and then how compound interest work really clicked for me when I read that book. And the other one is by J.L. Collins called The Simple Path to Wealth. And that's just the best book I've ever read on keep it simple. Most people will be well off by having 95% of their money parked in a low-cost index fund and have a significant bundle in there just compounding. And then you can kind of sit back and enjoy your life because the market is self-regulating. The instrument that you buy, which is a low-cost ETF, is doing all the heavy lifting so that you don't have to go do stock picking. So that's kind of a good segue I gave myself into it. What is an ETF and why is ETF investing proving superior versus active investing?
Active investing. Okay. So then let's explain this one in layman's terms as well again then. Okay. So pretty much an ETF being an exchange traded fund, right, is pretty much how, if you would imagine just like a basket, okay, of investments, right, that you could buy with one click of a button. Imagine it that way, okay? So instead of buying a single company stock, instead now you're buying little pieces of different companies, okay? And I like them, right? Purely, or I like the idea of them, why they were created, purely because they're simple, but ultimately because they're safe, right? That's the biggest thing, is that they're safer than your single stocks. Imagine if you went and, I don't know, bought Robinhood at its peak, for example, right? You'd now be sitting in, you know, the dumpster, for lack of words, right? Compared to buying, let's say, the S&P 500 10 years ago. Okay, you can already see the difference. Sure, if you had bought Robinhood when it was down just before, you would have made massive money. Right? But then there's that risk aspect that's involved. And that's why it's not necessarily the best, yeah.
Yeah, when I deal with my coaching students and I kind of struggle to get the explanation of, because it's a lot of strange words. You know, you and I are into finance. So words for us like exchange traded fund and S&P 500 and, you know, index fund investing, it's all very normal in our realm. But to the newbie on the street, it's pretty gnarly terminology. And this, I think, that it deters them. So what I normally explain to them is, like you mentioned, an ETF is a basket of stocks, let's say. And let's use the S&P one, for example, because it's the ETF out there with the most assets under management in the world. Specifically, the VOO, the S&P 500 ETF from Vanguard, has the most assets under management. So how I like to explain it is, let's say you want to buy an apartment in a big apartment block in Cape Town. Now, instead of buying one apartment out of this block of 500, you buy a tiny piece of all the apartments so that you spread your risk. And that way, if someone breaks in or there's a flood or there's a fire in your one apartment, you still have 499 others to carry the load, per se. That normally helps a lot of people click. And it's not that simple, because, and we're not going to get into the nitty-gritty of it, but not every stock within the S&P 500 carries the same weight. Ones with, it's market cap weighted. So the ones that are worth the most, like the Nvidias, the Microsofts, the Apples, the Amazons, they carry more of a weight within the index. But for all intents and purposes, you're buying a tiny piece of 500 companies every time you buy an ETF. And on average, over the past 100 years on Wall Street, inflation adjusted, you are looking at about anything between 8 to 10%, according to the sources that I study. I always do my calculations on a more conservative amount at 7 to 8%. And that way, anything else
is a bonus.
Is a bonus. Now, it very rarely happens. I've been investing since 2020, my first year in yachting, just as COVID started. And there has not been a single year where it has returned 7 to 10%. In fact, there was in 2020, you know, in March, it dropped by 60% overnight, one of the biggest single day crashes in the history of the stock market. But then it bounced back and the year ended very positively. Same with 2021, 17% on the S&P 500. In 2022, it went down 19%. So you kind of needed a stomach of steel. And then since 2022, it has just ripped 16, 18. And this year we are up, I believe, 15% year to date. So everybody hearing the magic 8 to 10% per year number, that's not always the case. We are talking about an average spread of many decades. Okay, then next up, why would a ETF be better than picking an individual stock or picking a cryptocurrency, for example? Or safer? We can't guarantee better. We mean safer.
Okay, so with stocks and crypto, listen, they have their place. I'm not going to lie. They do have their place, but it's specifically for a very niche market. Okay, but if we had to base this in the yachty realm of things, okay, a yachty's job, okay, is to work on a boat. Okay, go and work and do your duties, et cetera, et cetera. Now, there are some guys that are, you know, they want to create this wealth. Okay. And so they're dedicated, or they have put the time aside to go and study and do their research. However, that's not necessarily the case with every single Yachty. So keep that in mind. So if you had to go single stock picking, right, or let's say if you had to go crypto, pretty much you're betting on what might happen. Okay. But this involves a lot of research. This is the problem. Okay. So with ETFs, instead, now you're owning a broad, you're owning a broad portion of sections, okay, that have been proven by historical figures to grow over time. It's purely, it's just as simple as that. Yeah.
Okay. Sure. I like that. And then scenario, you're a deckhand that just finished your first med season. And you managed to scrape together $10,000 at the end of the season after enjoying a bunch of beach parties and buying a fake Rolex in the south of France. Now, you have 10 grand left. How would you deploy that?
Sure. In my personal, or this is also completely different. Everyone's got their own different things. If I had to go personally, I'd say 60% of it, right, would go into, so $6,000, right, would go into some sort of global ETF, okay? It has to be. It has to be global, right? That would just give me, that would give me some sort of an exposure into the world markets, right, into a number of companies. And then probably the other half would go into a more broad US or European ETF, right? So maybe like the S&P, but maybe also Eurostoxx 50. Okay. Yep. Maybe we'd also do something there, but it also just depends on where I'm willing to settle. Okay. So if I wanted to come back to South Africa, we might even look at 40% of the remaining 40% of that, you know, let's bring that back to South Africa, start building up some wealth. Yeah, for sure. That's how I did.
Interesting. And then one of my favorite sayings in investing is time in the market over timing the market. And we kind of touched on it earlier when you, when we spoke about the magic of time in investing. So why don't you simplify what that sentence means?
Okay, so time in the market wins every single time. Okay, yeah, that's a bit of a play on words, but time in the market wins every single time, right? If you timing the market, you are becoming a trader, right? If you have time in the market, you are known as an investor, right? Investors win majority of the time, right? For example, a fund manager, or more like a discretionary fund manager, right? Or a hedge fund, right? Will lose more often compared to, you know, just tracking an index fund. Right, the S&P has proven to outperform majority of your hedge funds for that exact reason. Okay. Time in the market also allows you to get past those, we call it wobbliness, right? People call it volatility, right? It is volatility, but for those that don't know, that's just the wobbliness in the market. The market is going to experience ups and downs. Okay. If, for example, you purchase the stock today, right? And in a year's time, you see the stock is going down, but now you want to go and buy a house. Okay. You need that capital, right? You're going to now be pulling out your money at a loss. Okay. Or at a small gain, for example. Whereas if you had kept it in there and it accrued over time using that compound aspect, as we said earlier, right? You're now running through those dips. Okay. And ultimately it's time in the market that will benefit you in the end. Yeah.
Nice. I love that. That's a good explanation. And then moving forward, now someone has, like me, been very disciplined during their yachting journey, and they've invested diligently and they have put quite a substantial amount in their portfolio to compound. And now forward 5, 10, 15, 20 years, however long it takes, you are approaching financial freedom. Okay, and now this is a very difficult thought experiment because neither of us are there yet. But what would financial freedom mean to you?
Well, financial freedom. Okay, in my opinion, right, I am always financially free. Okay, I believe that I can do anything that I want to, but that's also based on my own personal background. But I'd say when I don't have to do anything that someone else tells me to do, that's when I know that I've got financial freedom. When, for example, I get onto a bad boat, right? I didn't have this before. And then this is appropriate for Yachty specifically. Mm-hmm. That is, if you get onto a bad boat and you realize, you know what, this is not for me, and you can say, no, okay, guys, I'm leaving. I don't want to be here. Okay. That is when you know you've got financial freedom and you're not relying on that salary to come in. That is when you've got it. 1,000%.
Yeah. Okay.
If you don't have that and you can't say that, you're not financially free.
Yeah, I agree with you. A lot of people, we live in a very material world. So financial freedom, I think a lot of people's minds race to, oh, I can buy a Bugatti or I can fly first class. Or that's not why I do it. I do it because I want to be in a position in a few years where I can wake up and say, today's a Tuesday, I feel like hiking. Or today is, it's a middle of a workday on a Thursday, but my son is playing rugby and I'm going to go there because I'm my own boss. I work on my own schedule. That to me is what financial freedom is all about. It's not about zeros in a bank account. It's not about any form of status or perceived wealth. It's all about having the freedom of movement. Excuse, that's a brand new home. To do whatever the fuck you want, whenever you want. It's as simple as that. And I think if you click it as a young person and you're like, oh, our money invested today is worth a lot more tomorrow, you start realizing I'm not just spending money by investing. I'm actually paying future Shaul to have a lack of time. And the moment I started framing it like that, I was like, okay, the sacrifices I make now and the crude dinners I decline, or, you know, not flying business class to my wedding, like, it's going to be good for us one day because we are going to be able to retire a lot earlier than the average person. And I'm fairly certain of that.
I agree with that.
How do you think the yachting industry can help crew get better with finances?
I was actually thinking about that on the car ride to work this morning. I'm not going to lie. And it is something that I've actually done. I've done something myself specifically. And that's got to do with everyone gets their courses, right? From the guys down in Cape Town, for example, right? From, you know, Ocean Star, SASA, SATA, et cetera, et cetera. But and I've contacted some of them before, right? Asking them, listen, do you have any sort of financial program that you are letting your students, right? Ultimately, that you are taking their money from. Are you preparing them for the financial stress or for the financial possibilities and opportunities that they're going to have? And a lot of them have said, no, Josh, there's not really anything. That's number one. Number one, a Yachty, when you're starting out, all you've got in your eyes is that $3,000 paycheck that's going to come your way every single month. That's all you've got in your mind.
Yeah.
And then that you're going to travel the world. But they don't teach you or drill it into your head on how to protect that. So I definitely do think that it starts there. 1,000%, it has to start there. But whether that's through showing them, I don't know, it could be as simple as showing them a slide or giving them contact numbers to advisors, financial wealth planners, it could be as basic as, you know, setting up some sort of budget for them, you know, something as little as that to help them financially. But they don't. Some of them might, right? Some of them might, but they definitely don't, they definitely don't knock on that door as much as what they should.
I agree. And I don't think it stops there. I don't think it's necessarily only the educational providers. The boats, you know, I'm actually launching a big campaign as the yachting investor to start talking to management companies that manage the payrolls and things. And they all care about crew well-being. But a big part of crew well-being is financial management because it's a major stress add. A lot of people can't exit the industry because they aren't being wise with their money. And if they provide all these other things to us as management companies, why can't they provide a basic personal finance course or, you know, make a, so I have built all these things and products, so that is what I'm trying to tell them now. Partner with me. Let me give you the resources. I'll sell it to you at pennies on the dollar if you buy it at scale. And then the management companies can then tell the crew, oh, guys, as a value-added service we provide to you, here's access to investing courses, to personal finance basics, to book and podcast recommendations, and to property curriculums. And that way, that way these guys get good PR amongst yacht crew, and they also do something that is beneficial to the industry. So management companies, if you're listening, please hit me up. I'm trying to get hold of you.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I definitely do think that's something that would flourish as well.
Yeah. I really hope so. Because it's one thing giving people a lot of money, but you know, you should have some form of responsibility, especially if it's young. You know, if you have a 19-year-old deckhand suddenly making 80,000 rand a month, the boy needs guidance. Like, there's just there's just no two ways about it. And then, Josh, to close out our final minute, I'm going to hit you with a quick fire round.
Okay, cool.
Okay. What's your best or worst money advice you've ever received?
Well, we can't say time in the market. I mean, timing the market beats time in the market. I mean, timing the market. I'd say, for yachties, I'd say probably 3 months slush fund. The rest, invest. Okay, the rest of it needs to be invested. Simple.
That's it. That's such a good way for us to end this off. Josh, thanks a lot. I really enjoyed chatting to you. As I mentioned, I'll add the link to that group you started in the show notes. And I really think everyone will benefit from this. We should do it again and maybe deep dive a bit more into some of these topics. But for now, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.